It is Morning in America. Welcome back. We've been looking forward to this. Chairman John Klein, Republican congressman from Minnesota's 2nd District, chairman of the House Committee on Education and the Workforce. Chairman Klein, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be back, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you very much. We talked to you in progress on this new legislation, and now it looks like we're there. Tell us what is up, what is gone, and what is coming.
Well, we're pretty excited because, as you know, this has been a long time coming. No Child Left Behind has been and is the law of the land, has been since 2001. It's seven, almost 8 years overdue for reauthorization. And everybody in America, almost everybody in America, there may be two people who've just slept through this, but other than that, everybody in America recognizes that it's a horribly flawed law, that every school in America is failing by the standards of No Child Left Behind. The Department of Education, the Secretary of Education, has been granting these temporary conditional waivers to states. It is just a mess. And so teachers, parents, principals, superintendents have been crying to replace the law. And we have finally been able to do that in the classic sense that the Senate passed a bill to replace it, the House passed a bill to replace it. We went to conference committee, hammered out a bipartisan compromise, which I'm pretty pleased with because it fulfilled all of the principles that we were trying to get to on the Republican side of the aisle here. And so I filed it, the conference report, last night. And it's a good feeling to have that. We should vote on that conference report on the floor of the House Wednesday or Thursday of this week.
And do you think the president will sign this?
I do.
Okay. I want to talk to you about the bipartisan support later, but it is actually remarkable in our times, isn't it, to have such a thing?
It is kind of remarkable. In fact, I made the comment to the conferees, the House and Senate members, Senator Alexander and Senator Murray, the chair and ranking member on the Senate side, and all the conferees, and I said, you know, we're pretty rusty at this conference business. It's been 8 years since we've done one of these things in the education world.
Right.
And yet, everybody understood that. It was a very open process. People offered amendments on the House side and the Senate side, Republicans and Democrats. And we went through it. Everybody wanted, you know, could see the goal. We have to replace No Child Left Behind. We have to restore local control. We have to empower parents with choice. We have to reduce the huge federal footprint that came with No Child Left Behind. So we charged ahead.
That's what I want to have you elaborate on. Some of our audience, you know, this administration has given its own name and the name of government such a bad name that it has even affected the word compromise, which used to be regarded as something reasonable to do. You know, you don't compromise your principles,
right. But
you compromise on details.
Exactly.
Hearing this, our audience is saying, okay, if you've got a bipartisan agreement, I'm nervous already. I'm worried already. Tell us the conservative principles or ideas which are embodied in this legislation.
Well, I think it's a very big conservative win. We place new unprecedented restrictions on the authority of the Secretary of Education because we've seen what's happened in these years where the Secretary is just able to establish his own education policy. We absolutely prohibit in multiple places the Secretary from forcing or coercing or incentivizing states into adopting Common Core.
Okay.
We eliminate the adequate yearly progress, the AYP thing that's causing every school in America to fail, and then going having to take these draconian steps. It repeals 49 ineffective and duplicative federal programs, and a lot of bureaucracy that goes with that. It gives your superintendents new funding flexibility because when you get rid of those 49 programs and you create a common flexible grant approach, they can spend the money where they need it and not have it sit there where they don't need it. It for the first time in statute like this, it prohibits the use of federal dollars to fund abortions, which is very important to a lot of our members. It offers parents more choice because it greatly strengthens charter schools, allowing right. them, good ones, to replicate and expand. That's a and magnet schools, a very, very good thing. And we did something a little bit different. We authorized it for only 4 years instead of the usual six right. to spur the next administration, the Congress's two congressmen right. now, to look at this again and see if they need to make some more changes to it. So we feel pretty good about it.
I bet you do, and congratulations to you. You're one of the main architects, negotiators here, and leaders. I want to focus in just a couple of points because I don't think it can be emphasized enough. The bill ends any future federal involvement in encouraging states to adopt specific standards, correct?
Exactly, including and specifically by name Common Core. Not limited to Common Core, but we specifically okay. include Common Core.
So if anyone had a problem with Common Core being dictated by the federal government, this bill solves that problem.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly correct. And that's a very, very important issue to a lot of people, a lot of your listeners, a lot of Americans, because they saw the federal government starting to almost mandate, but certainly incentivize, bribe, some people would say, states into adopting okay. these Common Core standards. And this explicitly prohibits the federal government from doing that.
Two follow-ups, Chairman Klein. We're talking to Chairman John Klein from Minnesota, Chairman of the House Committee on Education and Workforce. This is excellent that the federal government can't do this. I was an early supporter of the original notion of the Common Core, that is, mm-hmm. a voluntary agreement among the states. And I do think a framework was developed by those folks who did that that is useful and valuable for education. But it has to remain voluntary. It has to remain at the state level. I guess nothing in your legislation prohibits states from agreeing with each other about certain standards, correct?
No, that would be, from our conservative standpoint, that would be another egregious intrusion of the federal government. The federal okay. government should not be able to tell the states what standards they can or cannot
right.
Adopt. And if they want, if the state wants to use the Common Core framework, it's not the place of the federal government to tell them they can't do that.
Right, to either incentivize them one way or the other on that.
Exactly.
Good. The question I had, and you're always very kind to call me Ms. Secretary. I'm getting so old now, I wonder what you're referring to. way back then, and in the 80s. But one worry I had is that, and this is, you know, something I've argued with some conservatives about, is states left to their own have created some problems for us and for our children, which is sometimes says state standards are not honest. There's an honesty gap, as we pointed out. Reports that children are performing at levels that, the good news, but in fact, they don't know so much. Is there an audit? Is there a requirement of, if you will, truth in lending, honest reporting about what students are learning? How do we get that assurance that what we hear from states is the truth about student learning?
Right, and that's a very, very good point. As you know, under No Child Left Behind, the standards and the performance to them were phony from the very beginning.
Sure.
Because every state built this, what we in Minnesota call a hockey stick approach, yeah. up to when they would get to that 100% achievement. And so it was phony from the very beginning. In this case, it is absolutely prohibited for the federal government to establish these standards. But we do still require in this legislation that the states test. And the weight that's put on those tests is determined by the state. But the states have to test, just as they do under the current law, and they have to publish the results of those tests
okay.
so that parents and teachers and school boards and others can see. They also have to disaggregate, as you and I have talked about this before,
right.
to make sure that you're not having a school that looks like it's doing pretty well, but you're finding that year after year, one of the subgroups, minority students or
okay.
students with disabilities or something, that information still has to be made available so that parents and school boards and so forth, local officials, can look and see if the school is okay. doing what it's supposed to be doing.
And does I know it, I don't think your legislation touches this, but that one test that I do like, the NAEP, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, remains. Is that right?
Right. It does remain, and that helps keep score, if you will, across, yeah, you know, from border to border. And by the way, Bill, when you look at how our schools have been performing, they're performing very poorly. This isn't just an exercise here us to shift bureaucratic responsibilities. Our kids are losing ground, and I think that should be very, very alarming. You have, as a lot of your listeners would know, you've got places where less than half of the kids graduate high school.
Right.
You know, that's an appalling circumstance, and they are not, only a third, approximately, are at standard in reading and math, and that's awful. That's awful. Our kids cannot meet their goals, achieve their dreams, if we don't have better education. But I will remind all of your listeners that nowhere in my mind is the federal government involved in teaching those kids.
Right.
That's not the role. Federal government's not supposed to do that. We're just providing a framework here, and then local school boards and states and teachers. I think it's important for everybody to understand that the single most important thing in whether or not a child learns and achieves is the teacher.
Yep.
If you have got a first-rate teacher, you can overcome all kinds of obstacles, and the kids will learn and achieve.
Right, that is the most important thing.
That's what we want to make sure that happens. Yep.
The most important thing in the school, right? It's still the case that the parents are the most important teachers, right?
Oh, no, that's absolutely right. But as you know, there are a lot of cases where the parents simply aren't there.
That's right. And you're absolutely right about that teacher, and that research has been borne out. And I'm glad I wanted more time, but I don't have more time. I was going to ask you how you got all these liberals to sign on, but I don't think I want you to talk about it, because I don't want them to listen in and hear it and change their minds. Because I think you've done very well here, and you have advanced, indeed, conservative principles, and I think people should be very happy. Congratulations, Chairman Klein.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Well done. All right, folks. I want to talk to you about something else, and then we'll come back. We'll take some calls. I see there's some interest in this, so we will talk about it. But let me remind you first about My Patriot Supply. The patriots who shaped our nation exercise self-reliance, and you should too. Right now, get a 72-hour emergency food supply for only $10 by calling 800-792-1993 while supplies last. Whether it's a natural or national disaster or a personal crisis like losing a job, this will help you be prepared. When you call today, they'll even ship it to you for free. So call 800-792-1993 now for your $10 72-hour food supply with free shipping. It's proudly made in the USA with a 25-year shelf life. It's a brilliant way to get prepared. Call 800-792-1993. Do it now. Claim yours while supplies last. Limit 4 per household. My Patriot Supply. It's not just food. It's freedom. We'll be back.